Welcome, everyone. This is Rosalind Sadaka, and I want to welcome you to this teleseminar today on a subject that anyone who is single is going to be interested in listening to and learning from, because we have a wealth of information for you. And the theme tonight is dating and avoiding dating mistakes to find a sincere, lasting, meaningful relationship. And we have two people who are going to be interviewing one another on the call tonight, so it'll be very interesting. My name is Rosalind Sadaka, and I am co-author of the book 99 Things Women Wish They Knew Before Dating After 40, 50, and yes, 60. And this book has been co-authored with Amy Sherman, who's a licensed mental health counselor working in South Florida, and she has a practice in which she speaks to women on a regular basis about singles issues, abuse issues, and dating and relationship issues to help them make smart, wise decisions and create a happy future and long-lasting relationships. So I'm going to just mute everyone now to get the sound real clear, and then we will move ahead. Well, I'm a licensed mental health counselor, been working in the field for over 17 years. Have a lot of experience working with families in abusive relationships, children who are involved in the abuse. I have worked recently with couples, doing a lot of work with couples and their relationship, and working on empowering them so that they can gain insights into what they're doing or not doing in their relationships that's causing them problems. So along with Roz, we worked on this book together, and we're very excited to share some of the insights with you, and perhaps it will help you in your future relationships that you experience.
Well, Amy, let me ask you about relationship baggage, because any of us who are over 21 have come into a new relationship with issues and baggage from old relationships. We have resentments, we have hurts, we have disappointments, and I know that it affects our relationships. Can you talk a little bit about that, about how your feelings from the past are going to influence new relationships?
Yes, absolutely. That's one of the biggest problems. People come into relationships with all kinds of unresolved issues and anxiety about the future. The important thing to do when you go into a new relationship is not ignore how you're feeling. It's a wonderful thing to get in touch with your feelings, and that's like it's not easy to do. What happens is that if you could figure out, if you could identify what is troubling you about maybe how this person acts or what they're saying or how they're making you feel, if you could identify those factors, emotions that you're feeling, that it will help you identify the underlying problem that is being triggered in your new relationship. In order to start a healthy relationship, you really have to release the past. And that's not an easy thing to do unless you have awareness and some insights. I can suggest that if you feel sad or angry, bitter, hurt, resentful, disillusioned, whatever those feelings are, acknowledge those feelings. They're healthy feelings to have, but you need to work on getting past them, because holding on to them are only going to sabotage your new relationship. There are a few things to do to release the feelings from your past. One may be to go to a therapist and have them work with you on, you know, talking about it. Another thing you may want to do is a simple little exercise that you could do in your own, the privacy of your home. And that is just to simply write a letter to the person who you have the resentment or the hurt for, and put down exactly how you're feeling, what you've experienced with them, some of the the resentments and painful memories that you experienced, and put that letter in some sort of a fireproof container and set it on fire. You could, of course, do this outside. But state out loud that you are releasing all your negative feelings and behaviors from this experience and really feel that you are releasing some of it, or releasing all of it, that no longer do you need to carry it along with you into your new relationship. You're done with it. What happened in the past is the past, and now it's time to renew and rejuvenate yourself and reinvent yourself, basically. Holding on to past grudges and resentments is only going to lead to more difficulties in your new relationship because things are going to be triggered that will cause you to remember that feeling again, and you need to work on that in order to not, you know, bring it into your new, more potential relationship that you're trying to develop.
I love that idea. I think ceremony or ritual of any kind is very meaningful because it gives you a demarcation, a stopping point and a starting point where you could actually say, okay, I'm starting a new chapter in my life with a new belief system, and you could really take off from that point. So I think that really is a smart idea.
It's very freeing also. You really feel that you've released a burden off of your shoulders. You know, you feel like you have really reinvented yourself because you no longer, you know, when the emotional charge that you carried with you all these years perhaps is released, then even if you hear an old song or you go to a restaurant that you've been to with this, you know, that this other person and you had gone to, it no longer does it matter. There's no charge behind it anymore, and you're able to experience wonderful new experiences, you know, without carrying all that past negativity with you into the new relationship. So it's very freeing.
Thank you. That's great. Let's talk a little bit about some of the pitfalls and relationship traps that everyone faces. Is there a question about that you want to discuss?
Well, yeah, Roz, I'd like to ask you, so many times we repeat the same patterns from our past, and we wonder, you know, why it's the same thing is happening over and over again. So if you could address some of the pitfalls that you are familiar with that people commonly fall into, that would be very helpful.
Yeah, one of them is not reading the other person accurately. You know, you too often, women especially, become codependent or needy, and they think, now I finally have a relationship with a decent person, and they sort of give up their life to the other person. And it's not your partner's job to make you happy. So if you're not happy now as a single person, and you are under the illusion that this guy's going to come along and that's going to be the partner that's going to fix you, heal you, fill the needy void, you're going to create the same disappointing relationships you've had in the past because no one can do that for you. And it's very important to understand that it's not your partner's job to make you happy, and then you need to do the inner work first. And I suggest before you move into another relationship, do the inner work. Go to workshops, work with therapists, go to a group, read some books that talk about the self-esteem that you need to build and create, because the more you're at peace with yourself and love yourself and feel good about yourself, then the less you're looking for another person, especially another man, to do that for you, because you're going to be disappointed. Another one of the pitfalls is focusing on the negative aspects of relationships. We can pick relationships apart. And we could, especially with the old baggage that we bring into a relationship that isn't healthy, we could start looking at everything in a negative way in the new relationship and sort of sabotage it right from the beginning. So we have to be able to let go of a few things. For example, does it matter if he dated a lot of women before as long as he's really interested in you now? Do you want to get into his past? Does it matter if he has a picture of his ex and the kids on the wall in his apartment? You know, there's issues where they're very important, and we'll talk about those. And then there's others where you can be creating a lot of what-ifs unnecessarily and sabotage your relationship. So that's
Roz, can you talk about some of the clients that I see say that they love each other, but they don't like each other? And to me, that says that they're really not friends first. Can you address that as a trap that people fall into?
Yeah, I do think that it's so important to be friends first.
You can't read that. You have to rewrite it.
Because,
you can't read that on a fax.
Can you, I'm sorry, can you mute yourselves with, I think it's star six, those of you on the phone, so that we don't have interference? Let's see if that works. And hopefully you could all still hear me. If you start a relationship just on the chemistry of sex and that attraction, excitement, the same as when you were in school and in your early 20s, then you're not looking at a relationship in a mature, realistic way. It's important to build a foundation, just like anything else you do. And if you have a foundation that's built on friendship and trust, then you're going to be able to weather the storms that are inevitably going to come up in any relationship. So don't get sucked in by the excitement and the drama and the chemistry and the physicality of a relationship, because you want a relationship that's going to take you through the decades to come, and you want it to be based on something really important. And if you like each other first, then when you love each other, it's going to have a deeper level of compatibility and a more lasting level of relationship.
And that's so true. I just want to add to this that when you meet somebody, the same criteria that you use to develop a girlfriend relationship, you could use for your boyfriend or your potential partner for life. Because you want to share certain things, you know, common factors with your girlfriend. And while, of course, girlfriends are so different than your male friends or even your partner, but, you know, you still want to have that same, you know, the same kind of criteria. And another thing is to remember that if you want your partner to be your best friend, you have to be your best friend to your partner. So whatever you expect of him, please make sure that you are giving it back to him.
Mm-hmm.
So there won't be any animosity or resentment on either one of your parts.
Very good point. And one other I want to add is don't play games. If you're acting a part or doing what's expected or you're not authentically being you at the beginning of a relationship, the odds are that relationship is not going to be long-lasting. I know there's a lot of dating books out there with gimmicks and hooks and way to behave and to be and telling you to go to places where men hang out. If you're not interested in football and you go to a football game to meet a man, then it may work on the short-term level. But if you're really not being who you are and you really would rather be at a ballet or a library, then ultimately, that bond isn't really there because it's based on something unrealistic. So be who you are and go to places where you like being, and then you will find attracted into your life the type of person that you respect and that respects you. Don't act stupid or helpless or incapable if you're not. Don't play games or try to put on airs or try to change your personality for a relationship. It never works long term, and it's disingenuous and does you a disservice. That's really important to keep in mind.
That's great advice, Roz. Thanks. I'd like to segue into talking about abusive relationships at this point, because that has to do with playing games. There are certain criteria that a woman needs to watch out for when she's starting a relationship. And it has to do with identifying your partner as being someone who he really is. There are certain things that are very, let me just backtrack a little. When I was working at a domestic abuse program, so many of the women said, I had no idea that my partner or my husband, whoever it was the way he was. He was so charming. He was so wonderful. He did everything for me. He was a gentleman. And he actually, I mean, this again goes back to the playing games. He deceived. And the women were so caught up in the emotional aspect of the relationship that they weren't aware of what was happening to them. So I want to address some of the things that you need to watch out for right up front so that you could keep your antenna up and be aware of abuse when it is insidiously creeping into the relationship. And the first thing is if you meet somebody who is quick to attach to you, they tell you that they are they're so happy they've never met anybody like you before. I've never felt like this before. You're different than anyone else I've ever met. You know, lines like that, which may be very sincere, but if it's too soon in the relationship, be aware. You know, put your antenna up because healthy, realistic relationships progress very slowly. You get to know each other, you know, you talk a little, you know, relate to each other, you share common things, and then you establish that you really have a strong emotional bond and you really do find that you're different than anyone else I've ever met. So just be careful if anyone is very, very extremely charming and quick to attach, in 2 weeks they're ready to marry you. Another factor to be aware of is jealousy. Sometimes, you know, people are flattered by jealousy as being something that is
a sign of love.
Thank you. It's a sign of love, yes. And in actuality, it's not. It's a sign of lack of trust. It's an indication of the other person's insecurities and inadequacies. It's a common tactic that an abuser would use to prevent you from growing into a well-rounded and socially connected person. Because they keep you isolated, away from other people, from family members, from other friends. Does your partner tell you that other people are causing trouble in your relationship, or that they don't really love you? You know, be careful for, you know, phrases like that or comments like that, because that, while you may think, oh, they really want you for themselves, it's really an indication that they don't want to share you with anyone else. They want to keep you in their own control. You know, abuse has to do with power and control, and one way to keep you in their control is for you to lose your power. Another factor to consider is a person who minimizes their behavior. They may say things like, oh, you made me get angry. That's why I hit you. Or, if you didn't say that, you provoked me. Be careful, you know, for somebody blaming you for their mistakes. If you're with somebody who never takes credit for their behavior, you need to put a red flag up, because it's very important to take responsibility for your own actions. And abusers tend to minimize their behavior by focusing on yours and what you did. They blame others, it distorts what happened, and it certainly harms the self-esteem of the person who is being abused.
Very important.
Yeah, and I see it all the time in relationships that are really bad relationships, that's, you know, it's never their fault, it's always the other person's fault.
Mm-hmm.
And many times the abusers are coming to therapy because they want to fix their partner as opposed to looking at what they're doing in the relationship and fixing themselves. Another factor to look into is people who are quick to anger. You know, they have a short fuse. One moment they can be fine, and the next they're explosively angry. They may get angry or irritated over the slightest thing. They may find actually pleasure in getting angry. It makes you feel uncomfortable, and they may find pleasure in that. So you want to be cautious of anyone who gets angry enough to even throw things or pound the table, because that's a sign that they may get more violent later on and do more severe physical abuse to you.
Mm-hmm.
Roz?
I was just going to say a lot of those abusers also like to isolate people and try to cut you off from your friends and family and other connections so that they could have you all to themselves.
Exactly, yeah. Very often, as I said about playing games earlier on, an abusive person very often will be normal in front of other people. To the outside world, they're very pleasant, responsible people, very charming, and people like them. But to your private, inner world, they're extremely unhealthy. And Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde behavior will confuse you and keep you engaged in the relationship, thinking that maybe he's changed. You know, after all, he's so nice to these people. Be careful of that, because their changes in mood is very dangerous for you physically and certainly emotionally, and their true personality is usually seen inside the privacy of your home as opposed to outside the home. Another factor you need to look into is that they are intimidating. I'd like to read to you a short story that really brings to mind the crux of intimidation. And it has to do with a newly married farmer. He's after the ceremony at the wedding chapel, the farmer and his new bride climb into a horse-drawn buggy and begin their trip back to the farm. As they're traveling along, the horse suddenly stops for no apparent reason, and the farmer gets out of the buggy, goes up to the horse, and says, "That's one." Then gets back into the buggy, takes the reins, and the horse moves forward. Once again, the horse suddenly stops in the middle of the road, and the farmer says, "That's two." And he gets on the buggy again, and the horse continues moving. In the middle of nowhere, the horse stops one more time, and this time the farmer gets out of his buggy, takes his shotgun, and goes up to the horse, looks him straight in the eye, and says, "That's three," and shoots him dead. By then, the farmer's wife is terrified, and she doesn't know what to think. What did you do that for?" she says to her new husband. And looking into her eyes, the farmer pauses and says, "That's one." Now, this is an example of intimidation. Actually, it's a joke, but I don't think it's very funny, because it exemplifies psychological abuse, intimidation. Many women that I have seen said all their husbands needed to do was just look at them a certain way, and they had this fear that that overwhelmed them. Sometimes a tone of voice or a stance is all that the man needs to do in order to intimidate the woman.
And the woman walking on eggshells, kind of.
Exactly, exactly. And they're instilling fear. And fear is the overwhelming factor that women experience in these abusive relationships. So certainly you want to be aware of somebody who does that to you. If it doesn't feel right, then it probably is not right. Certainly, you know, we all know about verbal abuse, saying you're fat, you're stupid, you know, comments like that. I've seen women who've been married for 35, 40 years, even 50 years, who said their entire lives or marriage, their husbands would call them, say horrible things to them, and at this point, after 50 years of hearing it, they believe it. So what happens is they lose themselves. They lose who they are. They don't no longer are the person they were when they were younger. And emotional abuse is even more painful and more long-lasting than physical abuse. So, you want to, if you are in a relationship like that, what you want to do immediately is get yourself out of it as soon as possible. Certainly, sexual abuse is, along with physical abuse, is the worst, is one of the, you know, abuses that women experience, where they're forced to do sexual acts that are uncomfortable for them. It certainly is a violent behavior, and many women don't know how to, you know, get out of it. They don't know what to do or how to, change their situation. What I'd like to say, just I don't want to belabor the abuses that there are so many of them, but the best thing for a woman to do if she finds herself in a situation like this is certainly to find somebody who she could talk to and trust, whether it's a friend, a relative, or a therapist or somebody. And we're going to talk about this in a little while about empowerment, but it's extremely important for her to empower herself so that she can break this cycle of abuse, get herself out of it, and walk away from the situation feeling that she is whole again. So we'll talk about this in a little while, but
Excellent. Yeah, certainly. Thank you.
This is a very important to realize when you are dating somebody, again, The charmers are the ones that you want to, you know, just have your antenna up for, because they may be not exactly what they seem to be.
Exactly. Well, I think this is a good time for us to open the lines to any calls we may have. So if you want to unmute yourself at *6, and let's see if anyone has a call. If not, we have a question on the webinar portion. So is there anyone with a question who wants to pipe in? I think if you press *6, you can unmute. And I'm going to try this. Okay, anyone have a question? All right, well then let's, Amy, can you hear me still?
Yes,
okay.
I can.
Okay, let us go to the question that is on the webinar from Christina in Pembroke Pines, and she's talking about the fact that I'm going to mute again to see if we could get the noise gone. Okay, you can still hear me?
Yes.
Okay. She says when she meets someone, she feels that they hesitate and don't call back, and that she's questioning whether she should call them out of fear that she may be pushing the issue, and maybe if they don't call back, it was not meant to be. So can you talk a little bit about pushing in relationships and just how far one should go? No one wants to feel like they're pushing themselves on someone, and yet at the same time, some women are so non-assertive that they let potential partners go. Do you have any input about that?
Well, I'd like Christina to think for a minute about all her past relationships. There seems to be a lesson here. If she finds that she is the one who is more forthcoming in most of her relationships and puts the effort into it more than the men do, then maybe it's something that she's doing repeatedly that is turning men off. There's a book out. I'm going to plug another book. He's Just Not That Into You, which addresses the fact that if you know shortly after you meet somebody whether or not you're into that person. And if she's the one who's doing too much of the pushing and she's not getting the response back, then maybe they're just not into her. And she needs to look at what it is she's doing that maybe she needs to change. We have to take responsibility for our own behavior in our past relationships and realize if things didn't work out, it's not only your partner who has made mistakes in it, but you also may have done some mistakes. So she has to do a little of that baggage reassessing and seeing if
soul searching,
yeah, to see what her part is. Perhaps, I don't know if she's maybe a little too forthright with men that turn them off, or maybe she's saying things that turn men off. I don't know. But
well, it sounds like a good entree into talking more about empowerment, because I think that's an essential component of relationship success. The more you as a woman feel empowered moving into a relationship, the quicker you'll discard a relationship that doesn't seem right, that doesn't fit, that may be abusive, and the sooner you will attract someone who is more like you, empowered within themselves, because you don't want to find a codependent, needy, wounded person either who's depending on you for their self-esteem. You want, ideally, two people who are whole within themselves meet to enjoy one another's company, but not to be so dependent that you're leaning on one another, and if the other person is gone, then you just fall on the floor and you're helpless. And that's a visual that I use in workshops a lot, of people leaning on each other. If you're both leaning and one walks away for any reason, then you don't want to be flat on the floor. So you want to be standing in a position of empowerment, feeling good about yourself, and the relationship becomes gravy. It doesn't become the essence of the sustenance for your life. Does that make sense?
Yes. Basically, the relationships are enhancing each other. The partners
mm-hmm.
are enhanced because of the relationship, as opposed to having the relationship make them all that they are. So, yes, you definitely want to be independent people, standing up on by yourselves and maintain that throughout the relationship. Could you, first of all, you know, I don't know if many people know what empowerment really means. Can you give a little definition?
Yeah, because it's one of those words that's tossed around a lot. But people who have empowerment feel strengthened and enriched in their lives. And when you feel empowerment, it's an individual process. It's a path or journey that you have to take to self-fulfillment. And it's a way to increase your ability to make healthy choices. So it means that you feel you have value unto yourself. And if you look around and feel that you are unworthy and less than most other people, and that if it wasn't for other people that you are leaning on in your life, even if it's your parent or a friend or a sister or someone else in your life, that if it wasn't for them, you would be nothing or you couldn't make it, then that means you're not feeling empowered and you don't have a good sense of self. And you're more likely to be taken advantage of in relationships because you come across as needy and wounded and hurt.
Exactly.
Hurting.
Yes.
And so your self-esteem is diminished, and a lot of people will take advantage of that. They will exploit that. So mm-hmm. when you come into a relationship not feeling helpless, but knowing that you are a great gift, you are a great deal, and whatever a guy gets you, whatever partner gets you, is very lucky, then you're coming in with a sense not of arrogance and being egotistical, but just a sense of knowing you have worth and value and that you deserve to be treated respectfully. So immediately, when someone doesn't treat you with the kind of respect that an empowered person expects, you will move on because you'll say, wait a minute, this is out of my comfort zone. Mm-hmm. No one does that to me. And you won't get caught in deeper and deeper into these traps that we mentioned earlier. So working on yourself first before you start a new relationship is so important because you want to come in being the person you most want to be, and then you're more likely to attract another person who's equally empowered and who will treat you respectfully because they don't need to put you down, abuse you, make you feel less than them, and all the other things. Those are all come from people who have insecurities, who are very disempowered themselves, and who take advantage of others as a result of that.
Then, absolutely. There are certain inalienable rights that we have. There are four basic rights that we all have, and I wonder if you could just talk about that, because not many people realize this when they're in a relationship, and it may clarify and it may help them develop empowerment for themselves as well as for their partner.
Sure. These rights include the right to think what you think, regardless of what your partner may be thinking, the right to feel what you feel, again, regardless of what other people around you are feeling, the right to want what you want without anyone putting it down and saying that's stupid, that's ridiculous, that's not a smart thing to want, and the right to say no. And that is something that's so important because when you say no to something that doesn't feel right, basically you're saying yes to acknowledging yourself, and that is very important. So we all have had times when we've been influenced by either crowds of others or just someone else who was very powerful in our lives who influenced the way we thought, the way we felt, and the way we expressed what our needs are and what our wants are, and who influenced us to maybe not say no when we really wanted to. And starting a new relationship is a wonderful time to be able to remember those rights that you have and then to exercise those rights so that you move ahead in an empowered state.
Mm-hmm. You know, another thing is, especially for women, we feel that we need to be martyrs. You know, we have to do everything for everyone else. We have to take care of our families. We have to take care of our children, you know, and we forget about ourselves. Part of being an empowered woman means that you don't forget about yourself and you take care of your own personal care, you know, what you need, if you need to have, a massage. You need to go to the beach, have a little quiet time. You know, it's important for women, and I say for women especially because women don't really know how to take care of themselves because they're the nurturers in a relationship. So it's vital to keep your health and your well-being very high because you're taking care of your personal needs. And it's important also to never compromise yourself for the sake of others because it's your standards that you have to live by and you don't want to be diminished by anybody else. And that, again, has to do with our self-esteem. It has to do with not letting anybody abuse us or intimidate us. It means that you feel so strongly about your worth and value that you're going to take care of yourself above all. And by doing that, it enhances the rest of your relationship, so your children are more taken care of, your partner will be more taken care of, whoever is in your life will be more taken care of just because you feel good about yourself.
Yeah, that's how it works. And Eleanor Roosevelt has a wonderful quote that I know you added into our book that I wanted to share with everyone. And Eleanor said, "No one can make you feel inferior without your consent."
Yes.
So that's really important to remember. No one can make you feel inferior without your consent. An empowered woman knows that the most important relationship in her life is with herself first.
Mm-hmm.
And no matter how wonderful someone else is that you have a relationship with, if you're not getting the respect you deserve and you're feeling somewhat inferior in that relationship, then it's not a sound, healthy relationship for you. And everything in the book is about helping women put up their antenna so they pick up early on. They intuitively start getting an idea of what is healthy for them, what is sound for them, what works and what doesn't work, so that you don't waste your time in a relationship that's going sour. You just don't want to be spending your days, weeks, months, and years with a partner who really doesn't deserve you. And
absolutely. Yeah.
When your antenna are up, you pick up on that earlier. And that's, to me, is what evolving consciousness is about. We all make mistakes. Every one of us has made mistakes. We look back and say, oh, God, I was such a fool. And that's healthy. But if you're making the same mistake and if you're reliving the relationship and if you're seeing patterns where the behaviors are the same, it's just that the face looks a little different, but it's the same person treating you in the same way, then you're stuck in a rut, and you have to first get awareness about that and then take steps to make a shift and a change. And that's the only way to move ahead so that you're going to get into a healthier place, don't you think?
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, another thing that many women ask me in therapy is how could I be happy? I don't know what happiness is. One section in our book talks about happiness comes from within. Can you just talk a little about that?
Well, yeah, happiness always comes from within. It's related to what we were saying about self-esteem and empowerment. If you like your own company, then you're going to attract someone else who's going to like you and being in your company. So if the happiness is not coming from within you, then you're likely to sabotage yourself. And happiness is really a choice we make along the winding road of life. And many women will postpone their happiness and keep waiting. Well, when this happens, then I'll be happy. When that happens, I'll be happy. And you lose the ability to appreciate what's right in front of you. Happiness is basically a choice. It's the continual acceptance and enjoyment of what you have right now, and it's very important to get in touch with that, because if you don't know what it feels like to be happy, then you can't move ahead to be choosing a partner that's going to continue to make you happy, right?
That's exactly right. Very good. Well, let's talk about how do we know we found somebody who's perfect for us?
Yes, I think it's important for people to realize that, you know, there are wonderful, healthy relationships ahead for every one of us who really works at it in getting insights from what we talked about before to avoid the pitfalls, and then you'll intuitively know you found a keeper, so to speak, because there's just qualities that are there. Why don't you give us some of the qualities that people will know when they're in a relationship that's healthy and has the potential to be long-lasting?
Okay. Basically, the whole book that talks about developing yourself and gaining a position of strength, not insecurity, when you're finding a partner. Because when you come from that empowered position, you're able to make more sound choices in your relationships. And you'll also be more selective in choosing a partner. You, like you said, you'll get rid of those that have, you know, that don't make you feel good, and you'll allow into your life more perfect partner for yourself. Basically, what you will experience is if you find somebody who you feel really comfortable with. I mean, you are with somebody who you know is authentic. You don't have to fake who you are. You don't have to feel that they are not who they are. You're feeling like things are, you know, everything seems to flow. There's no need to push or force things. You trust what he says is really true. You feel happy, relaxed, safe around this person, and you have no desire to change any aspect of him, nor does he have any desire to change any aspect of you. Another thing is that you enjoy your time together. It's not like you say, well, you know, I don't want to see so-and-so because I'd much rather do this. You really enjoy your time together. You can't wait to share your day and look forward to seeing him. You feel, you know, you do silly things together. You invest time together. He also treats you, he makes you feel special. He remembers little details, perhaps, about previous dates that you were on. He surprises you with little gifts because it's a sign that he's showing you that he really cares and he really, really cherishes you and values your relationship. Another thing which is very important, there's more to the relationship than just the romantic aspect of it. You really feel like you're friends. You share things again. He possesses qualities that you really admire. He does kind and thoughtful things for you as you do for him, because remember, it's very mutual. You have a lot of things to talk about because you share a lot of things. He reveals himself to you, so you kind of know who he really is. And you enjoy sharing these intimate aspects of your lives together. Did you want to say something?
No, go ahead.
Another very important thing that when you know that you really found somebody who's a keeper, so to speak, is that your family and friends actually like him. It's very important to actually value and respect what your friends are saying. You know, some of your friends, if you don't trust your friends, may say, oh, this person is this or that. But if you really value good friends and they say to you, be careful of this guy, I'm concerned, you have to heed that advice. If your friends and your family are saying that they approve him, he's really nice, you're getting very positive reinforcement that you've made a good choice, you feel good about introducing him to your friends, so you're not embarrassed about any aspect of him, you're proud of him, he's proud of you, and he and shares, you know, he invites you to his family get-togethers, and he's inviting you to his special affairs with his friends. You enjoy sharing and showing off each other to your relatives. It's very important. Another thing is that he seems to be pleasant around waiters, janitors, parking attendants, which is also giving you a sign that he's a nice person. And he, you know, he treats other people well. He doesn't demean anybody. He gives respect to them and is courteous. It's a sign of good character, which is very important. And, of course, you're going to love somebody with good character because that's what you're looking for in a friend as well. Another thing is that, you know, you share a lot of stuff. Aside from sharing perhaps your, you know, common interests, sharing maybe the same religion, educational background, you know, there's a lot that you share together. There's a synchronicity. There are things that you find out about each other that are so common. You say, wow, look at that. You know, it's really nice to experience that with a partner that you really feel comfortable with. You connect with this person on a very deep emotional level. You may even finish each other's sentences because you know each other so well. You may experience deja vu because you both have, you know, similar experiences together. All of this are keys to your partner and you sharing a vision for the future. Mm-hmm. And
I think that's a key word, sharing a vision for the future, because that's very important. You really want to know that you're in sync when it comes to major future plans. When you're younger, you're discussing things like families, whether to have children or not, what cities to be living in, and major things like that. If you're in the older decades, there's still important things about the future to share, and you have to be talking about plans for slowing down working and moving into retirement and where you want to live and how often you want to see family and grandchildren and those kinds of things. If you're not on sharing that vision and one person wants to be on a cruise ship around the world and the other one wants to be in the backyard of their grandchildren, then you can be having a lot of conflict. So it's important to talk about all of those major areas. Be flexible on the smaller ones, but really discuss the big ones before you move into any commitment, don't you think?
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, you want to, you know, you may not be talking about marriage if you're in your, you know, 40s, 50s, and 60s and you have no interest in getting married again, but you certainly want a long-term relationship, and you should, you know, be comfortable enough to share what your vision is to see that it's in sync with his, you know, vision. And, of course, if it is, then you know that you may have found your Mr. Right. The book explains that there's more to meeting somebody than just the physical. And what we want more is that emotional bond, that connection, that long, loving, lasting relationship. You want somebody who's similar enough to you in crucial areas like your likes and dislikes, your beliefs, your background, your education, your age, your personality, things like that. You also want to be able to share your life's joys and sorrows with somebody and feel comfortable about that. You know, all your everything that's going to make you, you know, feel whole and complete, but and it certainly enhance your life. But remember, you know, you want to maintain your individuality. You want to maintain your friendships and all all the things that you do individually while you're in the relationship, because that just is part of who you are. And certainly if you are in your middle years, you want to, you know, find somebody who you could spend the rest of your latter years with. If you're younger, you know, you want to meet somebody to spend, you know, to have a start a family and live the rest of your life with. It's an adventure. And it certainly is something that is meaningful for both partners and definitely doable. And I think once you gain the insight and the awareness, that's half the battle, you know, understanding where you're coming from, what you need to do to enhance your own life, and then just go for it.
Yes. Barbara in Hollywood had asked the question, where are the good guys, especially the old sporty crowd? And, you know, Barbara, I think you have to be selective in where you're looking for them. The good guys are out there, but if you're going to go to the same places you've been going, then you're going to find the same people you've been finding. So, I don't know if you're, you know, in going to clubs and bars finding people or where you're meeting them, whether you're doing online dating, but I would really think about what is it that most works for you as far as your interests, and start hanging out in those places. Go to lectures or workshops about that topic, or if it's physical sports and activities, then attend the concerts or the sports that you like, or take classes and courses. Get really involved in something that's fulfilling to you, because you're more likely to meet a good guy who happens to share that with you, and you're starting out with a commonality. The good guys are sprinkled in with the bad guys. It's a matter of your discerning them, because you're understanding communication skills and you're understanding what your needs are. And you're not your antenna are up, so that you're quickly picking up on the players versus the sincere people who are out there. And, of course, we all want a Prince Charming to come along, sweep us off our feet, and to look like George Clooney. But there's a lot of wonderful princes out there who don't quite look like George Clooney, but will give you a princely life. And so maybe this is a time when that isn't your top priority. You certainly want to be attracted to your partner, But attraction grows, and it doesn't always happen the first date with sparks. And so I would, if you find someone who has good qualities, allow yourself to get to know them and see what happens. I know in my own life, my husband wasn't someone that I was attracted to in the first date in a strong physical way, but as we dated and I got to know him and like him more and more, he just started becoming more and more attractive to me, and I realized one day that I was crazy about him, and he made me laugh, and we just had a wonderful time together. This is a second husband after a divorce, and I am so happily remarried now. But I wouldn't have expected on that first date that this was going to be the man. So give yourself a little patience with that. And Luz in Coral Springs is asking how to overcome the fear after an abusive relationship. Amy, why don't you answer that one?
Well, you may need therapy for that because it takes a while to trust again. And in order to do that, you have to allow yourself to, or actually you have to be willing to trust again. What happens is we hold on, you know, we talked about the baggage again, holding on to the baggage from the past. Many times we're afraid to release it because we're comfortable with that. We're used to the way we feel. And in order to overcome the fears, we have to really allow ourselves and be willing to release it. So how do you do that? Well, you may need a therapist to help you overcome some of those fears and to trust again. But you can also start trusting, take little baby steps towards trusting people again. Allow people into your lives where you could be a little, and I don't mean physically intimate, but emotionally intimate, where you tell them certain things and see what happens with that. If they defy your trust by doing something, then you know that, you know, you gave a little too much. But it's important to just try it. And you have to be willing. You know, so many times I say to people, how long do you want to hold on to this feeling? Are you ready? Are you willing to release it and let go of it? And so many times I say, no, I'm not ready yet. Well, you'll know when you're ready to get rid of the fears and start healing yourself. And when you feel ready, and again, it has to be at your own pace and your own time, then just force yourself to let people into your life. Certainly surround yourself with people who are supportive. Surround yourself with women friends who can support you and give you the nurturing that you need. And slowly, you know, allow a man into your life where you could feel, you know, that if you give a little more than you ordinarily would, you know, and see what happens with that. It's really up to you, and it should come at your own pace.
Excellent advice. We're getting close to the top of the hour, and we're going to extend it a little longer because we have more questions, but I just wanted to remind everyone that Amy Sherman and myself, Rosalind Sadaka, are co-authors of the soon-to-be-published book, 99 Things Women Wish They Knew Before Dating After 40, 50, and yes, 60. And the book will be out, we hope, next month. But in the meantime, we have a free dating tips email that we will send you. It's a dating tips sheet that we will send you via email. If you send an email to divorcepro@gmail.com. That's divorcepro@gmail.com. I have another book on divorce, and that's why I use that email address. But if you send that to me, we'll send you the dating tips sheet that'll be really valuable for you, and then we'll let you know when the new book is published, and we're really excited about that. In the meantime, we have another question, and that is, I love to go out. I try to stay away from the bars. Do you recommend online dating? And that's a big topic, and it's certainly a topic that is very timely today, and we'll both give you some input about that. My input is online dating is as good and as bad as anything else that people are doing. It again, depends on your antenna. There's danger in online dating just because of the unknowns, but if you use some safety tips that people are talking about, you could get that information online and in our book. about meeting in public places and taking it very slow and not providing information until you're feeling safe and a lot of other safeguards, then online dating can be very successful. And I know many people who have dated successfully and even married successfully as a result of it. But it isn't, it's a tool, and it doesn't replace your own intuition. It doesn't replace your common sense. It doesn't replace your communication skills and all of the things that we've been talking about, which are much more important, the emotional connection. So you're dating like at any other time in history. You have to get to know someone. You have to start feeling if you can emotionally trust that person, if you have enough commonalities, if they're treating you the way you deserve to be treated, if your baggage and issues aren't getting in the way of sabotaging your own relationship, and if there's someone to be trusted so that you can move ahead. And that's going to be the case whether you meet someone at the zoo or online dating or a friend introduces you. Amy, do you have any other points about online dating that's worth sharing?
Well, I think you basically covered it all. The thing to be aware of with online dating also is that your profile should be, you know, as honest as possible, of course. And when you put your picture up to keep it as recent, you know, many times you're going to find a guy's picture 25 years old. But for you, I mean, if you're really serious about finding somebody, be honest, put up information about yourself that is true to who you are so that you start out with the relationship as in an honest relationship. But again, as Roz said, you know, be careful, be wary, and certainly meet people in public places so that you're not caught off guard, and definitely communicate with that person on phone and online before you actually meet them. But I have known many, many people who have found successful relationships online, so I think it's definitely a vehicle for meeting somebody. But there are other things to do. We didn't discuss all of them, but just real quickly, you know, rely on your friends. Your friends may know friends who know friends who, you know somebody who is wonderful. And don't be afraid. I know people are a little skeptical about blind dates, but certainly it is a way to meet. If you're ready, if you're open and you're receptive to meeting somebody new, you know, that's a wonderful way to meet because, after all, it's coming with a recommendation from somebody who knows somebody who knows somebody. And it's great. I think it's a valuable tool for you know, finding somebody who may be your Mr. Right. It's if you're willing and able to, or willing and open to go on that kind of a blind date experience. Mm-hmm. Another thing to do, and you may not have considered this, but you know, going to bookstores and going to coffee shops is a very viable resource for meeting people. You're waiting online for a cup of coffee, somebody's standing next to you who looks good, you make, you know, idle chat with them, and before you know it, you're talking about other things and you know, you met somebody. Mm-hmm. So it basically when you least expect it, again, if you are open and receptive, I tell my clients often to open their heart to meeting so that no matter where they are, if they're waiting at the, I don't know if people take buses, but if you're waiting for at a bus stop, if you're, you know, in a bookstore, if you're in the CVS drugstore, wherever you are, if you're in the supermarket, if your heart is open to meeting, you'll be very surprised at how somebody will walk in there and that's all you need. So you have to be ready and you have to be open to, you know, everything is an opportunity. And there are places aside from bars to meet people and, you know, if you're willing, if you're ready, then they're out there for you to meet.
Absolutely. Another good place is the gym. And any place where you're doing something on a regular basis because it's part of your routine, taking a class or a course, things like that, you're living your life and you're fulfilled in your life, and then meeting someone just becomes a wonderful asset to it. But it's not like you're out there stalking and desperately needing to meet someone. And usually that's when it happens and it creates the most positive surprise on that level, because it was just something that you weren't expected. But again, you want to focus on being friends first. And then when you do start a relationship, it's important to remember not to let the romance stop. That's another pitfall that so many people fall into. You have this wonderful whirlwind romance, say, for the first 6 months, and then you get into life. And life is not whirlwind, and it's not like the Julia Roberts movie, and it's something that's totally different. And very often people feel disillusioned, and they feel, oh, it's over because I'm not feeling the sparks I was feeling in the first 2 weeks. And that's unrealistic. That's juvenile, and that's the reason a lot of early marriages end, because people don't understand what a true relationship is. And a relationship is a bond that you build on trust, on commonality, on shared experiences, and respect for one another. And the romance will never be the same as it was in the first month. It can't be. But that doesn't mean your life can't be happy, and you can't be very much in love and feel connected to that person and grateful to have that person in your life. So have realistic expectations. I think one of the biggest mistakes on both sides for men and women is totally unrealistic expectations of what to expect in a relationship, what they're looking for in a relationship. And then, of course, your relationship is going to fail you no matter what, because you were expecting the fairy tale that too many women, we certainly know that, were raised with, expecting the knight on the white horse to come in, sweep us off our feet, live happily ever after, never have another concern in our lives. It isn't real, and I think it's maturity, ultimately, that creates successful marriages, successful relationships, successful parenting, and all the other issues, even successful business relationships, have to do with maturity, understanding what is realistic from ourselves and other people, being accepting and flexible as much as possible, and also knowing where to draw the line in not tolerating things that are unacceptable.
So true.
Do you have any closing thoughts before we bring this to a close?
Well, I just want to say that if you could actually visualize yourself in a relationship and happy in that relationship, it will help clear the way to actually getting what you want. What I mean by visualizing is just to close your eyes and imagine yourself with your ideal partner and just see how it would feel with somebody who you really love being with and see yourself laughing and enjoying yourself and doing things together and you know, being in love. And
feel it.
It and feeling it. Feel the emotions. Feel how wonderful it feels. Really get a strong feeling of that, because once you do that, you're setting yourself up for it to happen. You're programming your body and all the cells within your soul to create what you're actually looking for, and that will be the start for you finding your ideal mate. Just by, you know, knowing what you want and seeing it and actually feeling what that would be like.
Well, that's excellent advice. And I know that when you have that attitude and expectation, it does attract into your life just what you were looking for.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really important. So take advantage of that and take a minute before you go to bed at night and then wake up in the morning. And it's not a matter of visualizing whether he has blonde hair or brown hair or what color his eyes are or his height. That isn't the important thing. You want to visualize the experience that you're having, the feeling of being with someone you love and trust and feel safe with and secure with, and see yourself doing the things you love to do, whether it's dancing or traveling or taking a canoe ride or whatever it is. And those are the things that you want to focus on. And then the face will appear. The physical dimensions and criteria are not the most important. If you're getting all the others, then that physical part of it will fit into the mix as well. But get your priorities straight, and you'll be very satisfied and happy this time, because you will create. This is about you creating the right relationship for you. Not just having a date, but being with someone who's who is a meaningful, fulfilling relationship partner for you, which is what I know everyone wants and what you certainly deserve.
Absolutely.
So we will be bringing this to a close. We can have another program on this topic because there are so many other facets of that from our book that we didn't discuss tonight, so we can cover some more areas. If there's an interest, you can just let Christina know and through Women Helping Women Mastermind, and we'll set that up. And in the meantime, I'll just let you know that the name of the upcoming book is 99 Things Women Wish They Knew Before Dating After 40, 50, and yes, 60. And it's by Amy Sherman, a licensed mental health counselor, and Rosalind Sadaka, certified corporate trainer. And we're delighted to be available to you. We also do coaching and counseling work. And if you're interested in the free dating tips guide that we have, then you just send an email to divorcepro@gmail.com. Thank you so much for participating today, and we look forward to talking further with you. Bye-bye for now.
Bye-bye.